shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hey there.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dill.
And we are coming at you once again, separated by a distance of about 2.2 kilometers, bringing you album reviews and opinion from sunny
facts.
Dublin. Yep, facts.
Right? Not fiction.
Yeah. We try to make it as factual as we can. I do quite a bit of research for this show. So don't feel like we go into this blind. You know, we do look things up beforehand so we can bring you the freshest and most accurate takes. Coming up on the show this week, we'll have album reviews from The Novembers, Dinosaur, 4L. Get to that later. And we're also going to be reintroducing our Time Machine segment. How exciting is that?
I can't believe we forgot it, really. I mean, we have an excuse, but, you know, could have got back to it.
Yeah, no, we should, we could have and should have. I think we were both kind of so sad about the demise of Sunstroke Festival, which had sort of had replaced temporarily the Time Machine segment, that it was we were a little bit too heartbroken to bring it back. But now's a good time because I don't know about you, but I'm starting to feel the album releases just maybe slow down slightly.
Yeah, I mean,
ever so slightly.
We'll get to it next week, no, next time. But Lady Gaga had delayed her album until just this morning.
Yeah.
And it was originally going to come out, I'd say, in the middle of our quarantine, middle of April. So, yeah, and that was the delayed people doing it. So now we got the people who are... who've already scheduled it from way far back.
Many albums, I think what we're going to start seeing is now, this is the sort of eye of the storm as such, and then come late June, early July, we're going to start seeing a lot of those artists that... postponed album releases. We're going to start seeing those albums. Barry Tomorrow is one. Lady Gaga's album came out today, obviously. Biffy Clyro put their album back. You know, that's going to start happening. And I think then we're going to ramp up in the album releases. But that's just a little peek behind the curtain.
I really do think the big artists should just... shouldn't mind as much, you know?
But, yeah, I know what you're saying, Dill. But then at the same time, how big is... too big to fail in the context of the music industry? Because when you've put the last 2 years of your life into a record, be it Lady Gaga, or, you know, be it a really small, you know, or an artist that's comparatively small. I mean, Barry Tomorrow aren't a small band, but they're another band who I know pushed their album back and they're smaller than Lady Gaga. It's like, you, that's your paycheck for the next, potentially the next 18 months. You could be reducing your income by as much as 50% by not, or even more, to be honest with you, 75%, by only having people be able to book, you know, buy your album online or stream it. They can't come to see your show. They can't walk into Tower Records and buy the vinyl. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think most people who'd buy the vinyl are up for ordering it. I think it's just the show part that pays.
And of course, sometime in the, I don't know when it was, maybe the late 2000s, early 2010s, the model switched. For so many years, it had been you play the shows to promote record sales. And then at some point, it flipped to you basically make records and sell them and put them out there to have people buy tickets to come see you. And not only just see you, but also buy merch.
Yeah, and geez, I think... YouTube views are the closest thing to like big money you can make, because that's more so than Spotify. Like the views Gaga will get on her videos are definitely in the millions already. So
I think that's, it's such an interesting conversation too, because
it evens
out
when
you weigh up the comparative costs of producing high quality music videos versus AdSense revenue from YouTube. It's a fantastic revenue stream and it's great that it exists, but I think something we can all agree on is that streaming royalties are just they're too damn low.
Yeah, I don't care if you add a donate button to your Spotify bands.
Yeah,
that ain't it, chief.
that ain't it, chief. Just maybe, you know, quadruple or fucking 10x the royalty that's going out to artists. And I, for one, I haven't even told you what the Time Machine album is, but I will when I'm done with this rant. This is what terrifies. It's the value fence and it's the price point, right? because the price for an infinite universe of music per month seemed to just sort of arbitrarily be set at 10x, whatever your currency is, so €10, $10, £10. I think the British pay it might be £8, but because it was sort of arbitrarily set at that for something that you can't really put a value on, it turns out that that price, even though it's what's been set as the default in people's minds, it's way, way too low to actually support the industry that it that supports it, you know, that allows it to be possible. I mean, what would you pay for a monthly streaming service? I'm genuinely curious. If it's 10 euro, then it's 10 euro. It might be for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I would probably pay 25 would be the most I'd pay.
Yes, most. Yeah. Definitely in that amount.
Yeah. Now, I feel slightly better, ever so slightly, because I subscribe to YouTube Premium, which has YouTube Music and Google Play Music, as well as Spotify. Oh, yeah. So it's like, there's a little bit of extra revenue there, but, you know, it's small potatoes. Really, what you need to be doing is, like you said, go online, order the vinyl. Like I did, I got Nothing Is True and Everything Is Possible.
Was that the thing you were waiting on today?
Yeah. Ha! No, not okay. today. Yeah, no, okay. I put out a tweet. No, I'm waiting for a... I suppose I could say this. I ordered, at great personal expense, an iPad for music making purposes. Yes. So,
good.
Yep.
Finally, a working piece of technology.
Yeah, I mean, the technology we're using to produce this show is perfectly adequate, but it's not quite up to snuff to really dig into music making stuff. So yeah, so that's an exciting development, and I also get to watch YouTube on a bigger screen. The album that we're doing to sort of close off that part of the conversation, the album we're doing for Time Machine this week is Random Acts of Intimacy by Sucio Pero from 2006. Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting. It's one I've wanted to talk about for a while, and I think the reason for that will become apparent pretty quickly once we start talking about it. But Dylan, I don't know about you. We kick off into the album reviews?
Yeah, I think we shall.
Okay. So our first record comes from The Novembers. I believe the title of the album is In the Beginning.
Yes.
And The Novembers were an album, were a band that featured in your... Bubbling Unders last year? Or was it...
It was there
in the top 20.
Yeah, I think it was like top 10, maybe.
Wow, okay.
Or at least at one point it was, if not... One of the Japanese albums that we never talked about was there, and I think that was it.
Certainly, I did go back and listen to that. Was that Angels? Is that the album that you... you raved about last year? Yeah. I did go back and listen to it. Quite enjoyed it. I only gave it the one spin. Would you say that In the Beginning differs from their usual template as such? Or is it more of a natural progression?
It's a natural progression from them doing exactly what you said there. Because Angels was them definitely diverging off the usual path.
Mm.
Not too different from... I don't know, any other kind of softer rock alternative band you meet before that, with the occasional heavy song. Mm-hmm. I think this is a total transformation from the usual.
It's definitely different.
Yeah, and I think I gave you a description of how I described the last album. I think I said something like Nine Inch Nails meets Beach Boys meets... Fuck if I know. I gave a huge list, and you were like, "That's exactly it."
I do remember vivid. Thinking, "Wow, it's funny that you should say that." Yeah, I certainly have Nine Inch Nails written down here. I didn't go back to that conversation. I probably should have when you were describing what they sounded like. But to my ears, and I should say they're from Utsunomiya. Is that roughly accurate?
Yeah, it is.
It's close by to Tokyo. And it's actually didn't look this up. Is this their fourth album or their fifth?
I think it's their fifth.
Something. I usually write that down. Somewhere along those lines. Anyway, they're well established. It is an interesting mix, because what I heard was a largely electronic driven band sound. So I think it's like it largely fits into that sort of electronic rock genre, with hints of something that I wasn't expecting, which is almost sort of a new romantic crooner kind of sensibility. Like if you cast your mind back to the days of like George Michael and Spandau Ballet and Wham
meets New Order
Culture
almost
Club. Yeah, like even Japan and David Sylvain and stuff like that. It's like it definitely goes for the Emmental at points, but then will also clobber you over the head with a sort of a Nine Inch Nails-y, Rammstein-y kind of chug. So
yeah, they definitely have like a metallic edge now, a la Alice in Chains or something.
Yeah, but only it's used very sparingly. It's only really kind of, I think the guitars only take center stage maybe twice.
Yeah. God, I think what Rose and the Children, yeah, the second song, third song ish.
Yeah, they I think get that's the second
pretty
song.
Nuts. They get nuts.
Oh wait, do you mean the super metal one?
Yeah,
that's, I think that song is called Understander. If Google Translate isn't leading me astray,
Li Jiaichu. It's I think it's Chinese anyway. It's one of the Chinese names on there.
Yeah,
but that song's fucking insane. I think there's a part in it that goes from kind of your Japanesey Alice in Chains sound straight to a freaking what's the band? Not the Prodigy. What's the band that does a lot of soundtracks? Chemical Brothers. It goes full on Chemical Brothers, except deafeningly hard to make. It's hard to make out. It's intentionally hard to make out, but that makes it really kind of messy. And I think they do that quite well.
I found that one, I hate to kick off kind of negative, but that probably was my low light. I just found it a little bit fairly derivative, sort of Trent Reznor worship, just that song. But in other places, I found a lot to like in terms of, like on Vanishing Point, for example, it really strikes a lovely balance between these kind of dark, synthy vibes and electronic textures. Then there's almost sort of a Depeche Mode 80s cheese, but in a good way, to the vocal melodies. And there's also a very cool incorporation of Eastern, I don't know if it's Eastern instruments, but it's certainly Eastern intonation and melody in certain parts of the song. Yeah,
number 6 as well continues that pretty nicely.
Yeah, that one's kind of got a ritualistic feel to it.
Yeah.
It's very driving and sort of, it's percussion led, I would say.
Yeah, feels oddly culty.
Yeah, culty is a good
kind of a shanty way. It's very interesting, I thought. it is jarring. It is a jarring album, I will admit.
Yeah,
but I think that's what makes them stand out so much without being
ridiculous.
Do you
know what I wish? I wish that, because it starts off with Rainbow, right? And it's got this really cool indie electro, like I said, indie electro meets sort of 80s pop bent to it. It sort of reminds you of maybe Get to Heaven era Everything. It's super synth driven. Yeah. There's hardly a guitar to be found, but it kind of creates a very unique atmosphere that I haven't heard very many times before. And if they'd really kind of committed to that, and it's here in pockets throughout the album. I think like other songs like that would fit onto that album would be maybe like New York. Certainly the last track, Open Window.
Open Window. Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think I insulted something a couple weeks ago by referring to it as like the Wii Music version of another thing. But Open Window, it reminds me of Wii Music in the best way. Sounds real. It's like Wii. It's like the 80s Tokyo shop channel on the Wii is what it sounds like. It's great. I love it. But
yeah, I think at the best, this album has a very Beatles-esque sensibility to its songwriting. Very kind of,
I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't. It's that adventurous. It's very unique. It just is, and in a musical kind of sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly a little bit of that on New York, for example, which is just this sauntering groove-based kind of, I don't know what you would even call it. Like,
it has a song. It has a New York saunter. It's obviously
it
that,
has a saunter right? to it. It's almost like old school hip hop or something.
It's kind of bubbly rhythm with the synths.
Yeah, that was a real curveball, and I appreciated that. I suppose, they definitely riff on genre quite a bit throughout the record. I think sometimes for better and sometimes for worse. Yeah. For the vocal approach, it's interesting because at times, I think that it's Yusuke Kobayashi is the singer. I think he does some really great work on like Hamlet Machine, which is definitely the more successful heavy song, and then Open Window towards the end. I think he's got a great voice, but when he does really turn up the dial on the cheese, it's a bit too much for me. And then I also feel like when he goes,
that's the Beach Boys-y elements, which I think you'd love. I personally am all about that.
Yeah,
it's a little jarring.
It can be. I think what's more jarring, I'd be fine with that, but I think what's more jarring is there's a little bit of kind of screaming and quite aggressive vocal stylings on this record, and I don't really hear, apart from the chugging in a couple of tracks, I'm not sure this is really the band that I want to hear giving that sort of a really aggressive vocal delivery. It doesn't feel super appropriate to the music.
Oh,
maybe you disagree. Maybe
parts.
I love a good scream, but
like, I think you're talking about the song with the
Dead Heaven,
the pig squeal kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, exactly.
There's a whole, he really, I mean, it just sounds like it's not his strongest suit, really. And
I think screaming can be super
effective
at
moments of emotional catharsis, even in music like this, but it didn't feel like the positioning of the screaming was exactly where maybe it needed to be. I'm not 100% sure.
I think I'm fine with it.
You're fine with
it. It's fucking weird, and I'm on board for that. Yeah. As long as it's powerful and driving, which it is.
Yeah.
They're obviously just as good as a hard rock band as they are kind of... The weird Beach Boys-y elements. I keep going back to Beach Boys.
Yeah, you could... I don't mean to be contrarian, but I definitely feel like this is maybe 15 years post.
Yeah.
I do feel like a lot of the homages being paid are more to 80s pop. But
sure, yeah.
I Beach Boys, I guess.
Just very pleasant harmonies is where I come to.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think Shy Boy is really just completely destroyed my ability to compare anything to the Beach Boys because it was so similar. But I think to sum this one up, I guess it's like vaguely post-punk inspired,
yeah,
poppy, electronic infused. I don't want to say J-rock. There's only very little hints of that here, but
it definitely distances itself from the usual VK or whatever.
Yeah,
J-rock pop elements. Definitely more Western influences.
Yeah, but I still think you couldn't listen to a track like Open Window and imagine this came from anywhere else.
Yeah,
which is a good thing because you know it's a strength. You know, a band from Michigan isn't ever going to sound like this.
No, I appreciate how timeless it sounds as well. Yeah. Like I kept on thinking, it just sounds modern. It just sounds modern, and I think it's gonna stick in that world.
Yeah, I found a lot to like here, but maybe coming so soon after their last one. I don't know if I felt like it really flowed.
Oh, I think it did.
You did.
I think it was shit, we could have done a double album with two incredible albums, or we could have done this, and they decided to go this way.
Okay.
And I think it's just as strong.
Yeah,
a few more lessons, I'd say. I need to get in there. I need to live with it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And like, there would be a couple that I would take from this. I mean, if we're kind of starting to wrap up on this review, I would take my favorite track as Open Window, because, man.
Fair, yeah.
Oh. That's a great song. I just think that's a really, really no feeling, fantastic song.
I kind of thought that for, you know, just all of them. basically, but I love how they do choruses because they can go any direction they want from the 10 or so genres they've picked for this album, which I guess is a bit of an intimidating aspect to it.
Yeah.
But Hamlet Machine, I love the way that has a second chorus on it.
It's a good song. Yeah, that's a really good song.
Yeah,
it's Hamlet Machine. Adding the extra syllable in there, gotta do it. Hamlet Machine.
It's totally there. But yeah, I love it when they go powerful.
What does that mean, Hamlet Machine?
I don't know.
It's provocative.
But
yeah, is that your favorite song?
Favorite song? Yeah, probably Hamlet Machine.
Hamlet Machine, yeah. Okay.
Or, of course, Understander, which I know you weren't too keen on, but I love that balls out Chemical Brothers moment because just crank it up on speakers and it's insane. It's like, why do you need this? I don't know. It's a daring song, and I love that, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. Quite like this. What would you give it, a score out of 10?
I give it a 9. I'm really hot on this.
Liar, nice. I'd probably temper that slightly. I'd probably give it a 7. But I still think I definitely think this is a cut above
Angels.
I don't know Angels well enough, but maybe more so like bands that we've covered in this general scene. But it's cool. It's definitely got something a bit unique to it, and there's some real ragers on there, particularly Rainbow and Open Window for me.
I'm amazed that the production is even better than the last album, which was just a year ago. Noticeably, like, and they found the clear as day. They got their claws into it without people telling them, no, that crazy Chemical Brothers thing wasn't a good idea. And it doesn't matter. It totally doesn't matter. So
No, it's cool. All right, let's hop on a plane and head back to London for To the Earth, the third album from Laura Gerd's four-piece jazz outfit. I kind of like when bands outside of the sort of usual crop of genres, be that kind of rock, indie, metal, punk, hip-hop, even sort of electronic, so there's often electronic bands, but for some reason jazz, and particularly jazz and classical, they don't like to give their ensembles names, and I think that does provide a little bit of a, I don't know whether this is just in my own head, but the fact that we can kind of call this a band and sort of treat it like a band, even though really in any other world it could have just been the Laura Gerd Quartet, and then we might have been less likely to kind of pay attention to it, you know.
I think it just gives it, you know, jazz goes for like this is a unit.
Yeah,
like this is the music is what you are. You're not singular in that respect. I guess it's just, you know, everybody is equal on that. So why would you need the name? That may be their logic to it.
Totally. Oh yeah, I think the ideas of branding are so secondary to a lot of jazz and classical performers, you know. But like, for example, I saw the Michael Wolny Trio a couple of years ago, and we've seen this band too, but I was sort of thinking, well, I know he's a band leader and he writes some of the music, but you guys are so fucking cool, why don't you give yourself a badass name? It just feels more like a solo run, and certainly a band like Dinosaur, yes, Laura Gerd is the chief composer and the band leader, but I like that they have a name and an identity, and it's I suppose it maybe does spotlight the other performers in the band. So all that to say, yeah, this is their third record. You and I saw them when they were touring their first. Together as One, I think, might have been the name of the album.
That was quite nice.
It was great.
Did not really expect it. I expected jazz. I didn't expect that kind of jazz.
Yeah, because particularly, I think it's Elliot Galvin is the sort of keys player, and on Together as One, you know, a lot of the songs incorporate synth as a really key element. And it makes her a very interesting sound, because you've got the tapestry of like Laura playing sort of trumpet as maybe the lead vocal, the sort of stand-in for lead vocal, and then Elliot's synthesizers providing a texture. Carrie Dick on the drums, obviously drums, but he's an excellent drummer. And then Connor Chaplin would back and forth between a sort of an upright double bass and a bass guitar. And it really made for a very versatile, maybe more similar to, not quite as poppy, but do you remember The Comet Is Coming? There were moments that were almost as kind of accessible as The Comet Is Coming. And then interestingly, I hadn't realized that was their first album was released in 2016. There was actually a follow-up in 2018 called Wonder Trail that I didn't even know we would have covered it if I'd known it was coming out, but that album was super synth-led. I mean, there's even sort of prog rock moments that that wouldn't stand out of place in Arctangent on that record.
That is odd, considering yeah, what we're
about to. Yeah, yeah, and I almost feel like we've missed a step in the journey, because that album was really synth led and very kind of song based, and here on To the Earth, I think we've stepped back into a formulation. I'll let you speak in a second, but just a setup. I think we've stepped back into a setup of very traditional trumpet, piano, drums, and upright double bass, more or less throughout, with very, very few exceptions, and recorded, I would imagine, pretty much live, which is the case for most jazz. All that being said, I don't even want to say back to basics, because they always had the extra elements. So this is maybe more even kind of a dinosaur unplugged. What are we saying, Dil?
I think this is they're definitely going for more of a mood piece here.
Mm.
Then throw everything we know, and of course it's back to basics. But I think they're dealing on definitely little bits of feelings and stuff instead of. It's strictly being all about the song. It's more about a setup for...
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of slow burn ones here that kind of vamp on a bass doing something, and they kind of... It's not repetitive, but, you know, it's progressive, very... Yeah, it is. Of course, it's progressive jazz, but it takes its time to get its point across. And I think it's effective. You really get into each song.
Yeah, I agree. This is definitely not one for the casual jazz fan. In the way that I would have immediately recommended Dinosaur as a sort of jumping off point. At times, I almost feel like this one loses itself in a flight of fancy almost too much for me as well. Like, I agree, it's very laid back. It's very subdued, particularly like if you kind of go through the first two tracks. I mean, you're kind of at maybe the 15-minute mark, 16-minute mark, and it's all like you said, it's vamping on a feeling and on a vibe, which feels, you know, downtown New York kind of.
It's got cool. That you get that in like the second, third track, kind of the muted trumpet sound, makes it sound oddly swampy, which of course is reflected in the album cover. Jazz bands do this exceptionally well.
There, you know, but percussion wise, there's some interesting stuff to kind of pay attention to. Mosking, which I think was the single, has almost sort of an ASMR approach, where there's like rattling and kind of interesting elements like moving held from by water, ear to ear.
Held by Water has kind of an African kind of rumble to the drums.
Yeah.
It's odd.
Yeah.
But it fits quite nicely.
Did you get any particular, it'll be the second time we've talked about him so far today, but did any particular musician come to mind when you were listening to Hell by Water?
Very, I don't know.
Trent Reznor soundtrack, I think. Listen to it again.
I'd say it's closer to Atticus, what Atticus pulls
in
that.
Well, sure.
Because Atticus makes that sound like that without Trent. I think Trent is a different brand.
Okay. Well, fair. But would not sound out of place on the Social Network soundtrack or Gonger. I mean, I mean, I love it personally, because when they kind of go a little bit darker, I don't want to say heavier, it's because it's jazz, but like
mysterious.
They go a little bit more dark, a little bit more mysterious, a little bit more threatening. I think that song really works. And then Absinthe is actually a Billy Strayhorn kind of standard that was written for Duke Ellington and his orchestra. And I didn't realize like what a phenomenal composer Billy Strayhorn was. I mean, he wrote Lush Life, which has been covered probably 1,000 times. And it's a cool, it's a really cool, it's a cool melody and it's a cool song.
It's kind of slurry, downtown motel vibes. On absolutely.
What I totally will say that. Is that it's the original is super classy, but it's 3.5 minutes, and I think Absinthe clocks in at nearly 7. Which again is adding the progressive jazz stamp to what is really a more commercially viable branch of the genre. as originally written. Yeah. But I'm not quite sure the sort of the central melody that makes up the song stretches that far. But you know, it's still very, very good. But I think I prefer the cuts on the album that are a little bit shorter, like the last track, for one, is just this really, really cool, almost sort of loush, laid back, slow jam.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
It wouldn't go out of place in a Yoko Kanno soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly.
To be honest, like Cowboy Bebop, straight up. But I quite liked what Banning Street Blues gave to the long form stuff. With more of kind of a feel good element. I liked how it worked that. Oh, I can't really describe it.
Yeah, that's definitely the jauntiest cut. I sort of thought that might not sound out of place as the theme tune for a highbrow sitcom. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally New York vibes. New York Cafe.
It's, what's the tune to that one again? It's just on the edge of my brain. The Banning Street Blues. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It definitely sounds like it could be like a B tune for Sex in the City or something.
I think it reminded me of like a kind of samba cafe in somewhere not in America.
Yeah,
maybe South America. But yeah.
Some lovely keys in that song. There's a sweet double bass solo. I guess maybe I felt like a little bit of a clod listening to this at times, just because I kind of was, when I first listened to it, kind of on first brush, mm-hmm. I guess, and the reason that I brought it to the show, I kind of had it on in the background, and so I was like, God, this is really creating an awesome mood and an awesome atmosphere in the room. And I just know that once I've dig into it a little bit deeper, listen to it 5 or 6 times, pop the headphones on and really kind of get into it, then it's all going to click. And it hasn't, I would say it hasn't quite clicked for me. And I don't know if that's maybe that I haven't spent enough time with it, or just that I prefer the hookier, slightly more melody orientated work that they've done in the past.
Yeah,
this definitely feels a little bit more highbrow.
I'd say it right there. It works what better in the background passively than it does as like I'm going to tackle this jazz music.
Yeah, maybe.
I do like that though.
Yeah, I certainly like it, and these are very, very talented folks. You know, so there's no complaint with the performance, but
no way, no.
Maybe it's just the slightly less song orientated approach that doesn't work as well for me. But you know, if you're looking for, you know, especially if you're a jazz fan, you do a whole lot worse than this. But my personal recommendation would be, even for you, because I think you'll really enjoy it, would be to go and check out Wonder Trail,
one. I'll give that a shot. I mean,
yeah, give that a shot.
Like, I'm just happy a jazz band is coming out something and getting noticed in the middle of the quarantine. You know, it's
For sure. And like the Guardian in particular has been really supportive of this band. They've never given them less than 4 stars for an album release. And you know, I think it's really important that so there is a young female face of jazz in you know, the 2020s, and Laura Jurd is stepping into that role perfectly. She's super talented. She's an incredible trumpet player and a really, really talented composer, and I just can't wait to see what they do next. My hope would be that this is the strip. So we've had the sort of the blend as the debut, we've had the sort of synth-led album, we've had the traditional unplugged jazz album. I kind of want them to meld the two again in future.
I'd hope for, because that's what I go to for jazz these days, is to kind of work well with every other genre that's ever come about since jazz was the mainstay.
Right, of course, which is a long time ago now. It's probably 70, 80 years ago. Yeah, 100 years nearly.
During the last plague.
Oh God.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it is a genre that I definitely always enjoy exploring, but maybe need to explore further.
But I'm glad you brought it on. I really do.
Definitely
chilled me out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Excellent. What's your favorite of these? What is it? 7, 8 tracks?
God, I think it's either the first one or Held by Water.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like the ominous drums to those.
Yeah, I'll take Held by Water also. And I'm gonna give it a. I'm gonna have to give it a 6.
I'll give it a 7.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. That is To the Earth by Dinosaur. Nice jazz band with a name. All right. Next up, we have another Japanese act, actually. A 4L, or if you were to write it down, LLLL. L. So there's four of them. LLLL. And also known as Kazuto Okawa from Tokyo. And this is his third record.
Yes.
I guess 4L because Pharrell was taken.
Pharrell, yeah.
It's like you don't want to get into any legal trouble, so write it as 4 L's in a row and it's pronounced 4L. I don't know. It's
God,
weird.
I mean, like, have you ever heard of these guys before?
No, have you? You brought it on. Yeah, I'd love to know more.
I mean, just tangentially off of some Anna Managuchi remixes. I think, their most popular song on Spotify is Always, but Anna Managuchi remixed it. So
right.
They were definitely in with the Secret Sky crowd, and that's Porter Robinson's kind of ensemble of friends he knows. So. Yeah,
makes sense.
Totally
makes
that.
Sense. Mm-hmm. Makes sense that this exists in the Porter Robinson verse.
It does.
To me.
I like. I when I think of modern electronic music, I go to Porter Robinson. You know.
Yeah.
I really do. It's kind of a it's one of the best universes that have turned off the Daft Punk Discovery. Big Bang of music.
Whereas I guess I'm still riding that train all the way to oblivion with, like, you know, my love of Uppermost and Sebastian and et cetera.
I think this is definitely incredibly underrated in that respect, this band.
And some would say that's a tragedy because, like, right off the bat, this is absolutely fantastic. This is a cut above... Yeah,
it is.
I loved this.
It throws a lot in the first song already. Like, you get a sense of real light fairiness of sorry, I see my cat chasing something outside. hope he doesn't bring a bird in. Has that like airy fairy electronic vibe, and it brings in kind of a rumble of bass slowly, then a trumpet out of nowhere, I think.
Oh,
or I think it's a sax. It's probably a sax.
I think it's a sax. But, man, that sax solo just hit different, I gotta say.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting blend of some organic elements, such as, you know, you've got nylon string guitar, acoustic guitar, electric guitar.
Vocals.
Chopped and screwed. Very, like, I would say very kind of Monster Cat, early Monster Cat era, you know, like... Yes, get a guest vocalist in, but take their performance and sort of chop it up and manipulate it in every which way. Just almost turn it into another instrument is what often happens on this, rather than having it as like, here's my song and someone sung over the top of it. Really blend the vocals down into the foundations of what the song is, and then add to that a little bit of Plastic Beach era Gorillaz, a little bit of kind of...
Yeah, that's in sync, right?
I would have said Weep, personally. But
sync,
to me, was more like that kind of Bibio Electro Soul, or maybe Tropics or something. Really cool. But yeah, then
it has
then
more of a full band element.
Yeah, there's flex of that kind of 90s trance slash... house dominance of like bands like Utah Saints and Chemical Brothers and Faithless.
And Everybody, I think.
Everybody's the one I'm thinking of.
That's kind of like Moby at his most sufferable.
I don't know whatever drum performance was sampled, but man, I'm obsessed with that. You know, great fills.
It's got a nice backbeat stomp.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. And then right down to like the title track, which is the closer, it's this really filthy, dark synthwave arpeggiator.
Arpeggiated,
It's very sort of like very, Vangelis, Blade Runner type stuff.
Yeah. but definitely kind of, I would say, the closest to Daft Punk they can get with Random Access Memories, because they used a lot of that, especially in the last song, and Motherboard Contact had a bit of that.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Sure. It's totally the best split of synthetic meets real, I guess.
And I haven't even mentioned like the thing sort of throughout that this most calls to mind, like I'm not even close to being done, but I would say the general vibe, which is maybe why I like this so much, is that I feel like it most recalls the first two Crystal Castles records.
Yeah.
In terms of like
it's quite an emo record as well. There's in the sense that Porter Robinson stuff falls under an emo vibe of alternative. Yeah. This kind of does as well. Like Please Tell Her vocally, that's straight up with any of Robinson's stuff.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. I didn't expect that emotion from it, but I was delighted.
Right. And I think there's the same. Yeah, it's like, you know, Alice Glass can kind of inject a lot of torment and sort of anxiety into what is or otherwise reasonably on the face of it quite jaunty electronic tracks. And Please Tell Her is a good. It's not Alice Glass, but. Please Tell Her is a good example. Breathless, Eula, I think is the name of the guest artist there, also does a fantastic job of bringing real emotion to that song, which I think, you know, God, she, you know, on a good day, she could be Grimes.
Her stuff is closer to that.
Yeah.
Like early Grimes. It's kind of minimalist, dream pop.
Yeah. That song, you know, it's really interesting, quite diverse. Like, it could be, sounds almost like Drab Majesty. It has that guffy kind of 80s inspired synth vibe to it, but then there's also like a slinky kind of 808 inspired rhythm at the start, that kind of boom 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 boom.
I will say like Pleasure and Notes to You are maybe interchangeable, but I've got nothing against them. They're kind of there. I really like them, but I there's so much to hook onto the other songs. Like, they're all winners. They're all winners, and those are good.
Mm.
You know?
I mean, those two,
keep the theme.
Specifically, I would sort of parse them out by sort of saying that I think Pleasure is the most sort of straightforward 80s synth pop, but then it's also, for some reason that I can't quite put my finger on, really fucking weird. And so that kind of just makes it interesting. And then Note to You is more like that Neon Bunny record that we covered a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Got the Korean like, K-soul pop feel.
It's nice. like Beaded Curtain R&B meets like maybe Susumu Yokota on speed. Like that kind of detuned piano.
It's so delightful.
Atmospheric. It is. It's delightful. It's just a really great mishmash of tons of different types of electronic music and all infused with a lot of emotion and kind of atmosphere. It's great.
Like it's surreal where you take this, because while listening as like an experience, like go out into a forest listening to this insanely digital music, and it will feel totally in place with a natural environment, which I like how it keeps that humanity to it while being totally weird in many points.
I mean and I don't mean this as a, like, I'm not trying to be kind of contrarian or anything like that, but
sure
this doesn't sound super Japanese to me. Like, it definitely sounds like there's a lot of different geographical influences. I know he lived in Canada for a long time and was quite inspired by, but like I really enjoy maybe taking that approach. Like
this kind of music has a big scene in Canada, by the way.
Yeah I'm sure it does.
Grimes, but like for instance,
whatever way this is, it feels countryless in a great way.
The
vocals are never prominent enough to for you to really be able to discern much about the singer. They're just there for texture and atmosphere.
The music videos for Weep and Yes are quite Japan inspired.
Oh really?
There's some Edo period stuff going on in that. Okay. Shit. But yeah, it definitely deals. Yeah, I think Japan are great at, are masters at kind of adopting.
Yeah.
This and making it something slightly of their own.
Yeah.
Because there's a world in Japan for this now as well, as yeah, there absolutely. Is. You know, American stuff in Japan is...
Well, it's just interesting because I feel like Japan is always is like the one holdout, whereas we can cover artists from all across Europe and all across America and all, you know, around the world, really. And it kind of almost doesn't really matter where they're from. Usually it will be like a slight spin on something that's kind of already familiar. Whereas I feel like a lot of the stuff that we cover from Japan specifically is rooted in, so rooted in its own musical tradition that it can sometimes be hard to break in. Whereas I feel like this is almost more in the vein of like, it feels familiar, but with just a little slight interesting spin and twist. And that's what I really like about it.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's a little different from the Hidefumi Kanmochis. Like still same club scene.
Right.
Of kind of the odd dream techno we're dealing with.
Yeah. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, everybody really, and it could have been a number one in 1995. Maybe it should have been. Like I would love to hear that in a club.
All of 4L's albums are like that for me. Like, go back to the one before and it's just as good.
Yeah.
A little different, but
yeah, you know, having listened back to that one, I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as this, but I still liked it.
Yeah, each album throws in unexpected stuff, and I really like that. He's learned well, or they've learned well. I don't know who's...
I think it's just a dude, but maybe there's more people involved now.
Yeah.
But yeah, great.
Yeah, I almost like this more than Porter's stuff himself, so I don't know. It just feels unknown to me still, so I like that.
Yeah. I suppose anything that's going to remind me of those first two Crystal Castles records, they were so special and important to me, and I think this really kind of brings that vibe back unexpectedly, and I like it. But with a more human edge, it doesn't feel quite as totally detached from emotion.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, really like this.
So yeah, Impure
is the name of the record, by the way. Yeah. It's been like 20-minute review and I didn't say the name of the album. Oh well.
Yeah. There's definitely that lovely area that the last Anna Managuchi album hit.
Yeah.
That feeling is exactly this, but maybe less rock orientated.
Yeah.
It just feels odd. Fun. Yeah. I don't know.
And it's not afraid to sort of sit back and let an atmosphere build. That's what I like about it. It's not hyperactive. It's not trying to condense the maximum number of sounds into each moment. It's very calculated in when it decides to ramp up the energy.
Yeah. No, like,
yeah.
Fucking every song took me to a different place.
Yeah.
Like as I was walking down the harbor way just behind my house, like, it was surreal.
Yeah.
You get a very surreal experience walking with this kind of music.
Yeah, you definitely do. I totally agree with that. Yeah. What's your favorite track?
I think it's Weep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a real deep synth bass to it that I love.
Yeah.
When it really gets into it.
Full Eurotrance.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I gotta take everybody. It's iconic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's great.
It is. I think it felt that kind of song felt like a bit more of a filler, but I agree, it's totally timeless and great.
I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah, it's a 9.
Sweet. That's a great. Yeah. Impure by 4L, which you will find by typing 4 L's in a row. L-L-L-L-L. All caps. Okay, so we finally arrive at the glorious return of our Time Machine segment. The segment you've come to know and love as
Andred.
An album from the past picked arbitrarily and at random to discuss on the show. Yes.
Where we hurl our babies into the wind and you hopefully like the fact that they're out there.
That's basically it. It's when we pick an album that we like and hope the other person likes it too. And on the chopping block this week is Random Acts of Intimacy, the debut album from the Scottish, I believe, quartet Sucho yeah. Perro.
For
some.
So this is kind of Biffy Clyro, but is it? What is it? How did it come about?
Okay, well, here's the thing. First of all, let me just say that I was shocked to learn that Random Acts of Intimacy was released in 2006. I would have sworn in a court of law that it was closer to like 03, 04, because I always sort of equated the evolution of Sucho Perro's career pretty strongly with Biffy Clyro's. So like with Biffy, their first album Black and Sky was 2002. The following year, The Vertigo of Bliss, their second album. The following year, Infinity Land, 2004. So actually, this album has more chronologically in common with Puzzle, which came out in 2007. It was kind of considered the commercial turn in Biffy Clyro's career. So I suppose maybe not to like kind of start off with something that could be construed as negative, but maybe whereas I felt as though JP Reid and Sucho Perro were maybe doing a bit of mutual discovery with this sound, which is very kind of noodly post-hardcore meets early 2000s alternative rock meets kind of a little bit of emo and that kind of sound that's kind of known as the Biffy Clyro sound. It may be a little bit of an homage to those first three Biffy records, or at least maybe the first two, because presumably this album was written over the course of a few years. But all that being said, like JP Reid from Sucho Perro, who's the lead songwriter, singer. He's obviously pals with Simon Neil. They both come from Ayrshire in Scotland. They're two halves of Marmaduke Duke, which is Simon Neil, JP Reid's side project. You know it.
I quite enjoy it. I don't know why, but I do.
It's weird, offbeat, wonky, indie pop music with a very kind of twisted sense of humor. And I enjoy Marmaduke Duke a lot. But I don't think Sucho Perro get their dues, really, because I know the sound is often, rightly compared to early Biffy. But
I mean, I would also say
that's no bad thing.
I could totally say it's of the era of light, twangy, kind of almost on the cusp of hard rock guitar that Billy Talent had to begin with in 2003 and 2006. That's when the first two of those records came out of theirs.
Definitely. And I think it also has a lot in common with it at times feels much more akin to the sort of Foo Fighters wing of alternative rock than Biffy ever did, like Finding with Wire. And then there's, you know, there's Flex of Ruben and Your Code Name is Milo and 100 Reasons. And
The Ruben's totally there in the choruses and all that.
Yeah, and it does get super, super heavy at times. But yeah, I would definitely see it fits into like that Scott Rock mold.
Yeah.
And it's cool. The songs, I think a lot of the songs here are undeniable. They're weird. But when they hit you with those really catchy guitar parts and brilliant choruses, there's kind of no denying them.
I'd say that's all there. Maybe bar the soft songs, the Apathy Injection, that all that stuff. That has its place. Definitely not mine, but it does stand out from what they're initially going for.
I think really that's kind of the only those two songs, Tem versus Calm and Apathy Equals Inaction, the two, what you would say, the sort of sugary sweet slow jams, are slight misfires. Like I think the acoustic work on Apathy Equals Inaction is really gorgeous, especially when it gets into that sort of double time picking. But vocally, I'm not sure JP's voice was quite there at this point.
I'd say that's the real clincher for it. His voice doesn't suit everything, but you know, I think I like it out of the whole Marmaduke Duke catalog the most. I like this section.
Yeah,
his voice and what he can do with rock.
And it's nice to hear a really extremely Scottish accent that isn't Simon Neil. Sometimes like the outro of the Crushing of the Little People, it's like the crushing. Crushing, he like trills the oar, and it's wonderful.
Like the chant at the chant at the end of Crushing the Little People, the don't give a fuck about whatever.
Fuck you, don't care.
Yeah.
Or
it's catchy. It's really
the
catchy.
Title or the title track. It's got this. It's great because it kind of has this really twinkling. I think the title track is a fantastic example of all the aspects of what they do, because it has this twinkling kind of Midwest emo verse, and then it gets very Black and Sky era biffy.
Yeah,
it's
then the all of soft a sudden, yeah, doing it well. That's what I wanted from the softer songs. Was it to build to something like that?
But then it just steps out of the alley with the 2x4 and beats you over the head with that. Kill me now, fuck me later. This is just massive, massive, massive guitar tone.
Yeah. It's on about
halftime. It's beautiful. Yeah, 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 yeah. And then they also do, I mean, their attempt at, I guess, like a radio hit, The Drop. It's just fantastic. Like, it's a perfect
4/4 kind of.
Yeah, early 2000s, like maybe sort of first album Paramore. Song and you, I just don't
I think the last song is that as well, right?
The last song, yeah, has a little bit. I think it's a little bit weirder, but it's a Hit Machine. Yeah, that last song, the chorus is great. Great song. That last song, the final Confessions of Mabel Stark. But I really think the drop was the reason I came back to this. I think because I really had such a strong connection to that song.
I could tell
like that. Man, yeah.
I was like, this probably days inspired Noel for days.
Like summer rain. It's really great. And then I like that, I suppose, maybe for me being sort of 14, 15 when I first heard this, that's a great inroad into the weirder songs that don't have a defined structure, like Grace and Out of Me, for example, or
Dialogue or on Carnival. The Two.
Dialogue
which is
on the
kind
Two.
Of like a staccato kind of guitar coupling with the vocals, doing a dun, 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 dun. It's very mammal. It feels very mammal, actually.
Yeah. I love that lyric. I am stupid. I have a basic understanding of nothing. That's a great lyric. I think it's some really fun lyrics all throughout the album, actually.
Universally self-deprecating fun.
But
it feels chipper because it's totally Scottish. So I don't know.
I don't hate it. I accept it. Sort of starts with, I think, quite a common, like, in terms of just like a white hot blast of distortion followed by silence. They, like, bands have done it, like Fall of Troy did it with Sidewinder Missiles, or Kids from Kibble from Infinity Land, Biffy Clyro. But then they sprinkle in this almost 90s alt metal feel. Like, that song, I think, has a lot of what the first System of a Down album had, which
I'd say
you would never hear in a Biffy song. Yeah.
And I think that goes to the part I didn't like, which was the fact that Tembi Calm just sounds like it off the bat. Like, it comes in sounding like it.
Like the previous
that song,
song
that just happened. I think so. Am I getting it right?
Maybe. I just think that song really stands out. I think I Don't Hate It, I Accept It is one of the highlights. So I'm not sure.
I agree.
But yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. I just think it's... I think it's a lot of variety on this album for what it is, you know?
Uh-huh. I think so.
They have a really great handle on the sort
riffs
of commercial
you haven't heard before as well.
Yeah, the commercial side, but also the really weird, noodly, spidery, post-hardcore side as well.
Indeed.
So, did you enjoy this?
I did. I really did. It definitely felt like a warm, comfy place. Not too far from Biffy. Not too far from Billy Talent. A little farther away from Asuifa. There were elements of the noodly guitarist that they have. Very kind of like, we don't need reverb for this guitar feeling that this album's all about. I like that. I like when bands can have the confidence to be complicated and not totally rely on reverb and stuff. Guilty as all get out. But yeah, it was just fun. It's a lot of fun. I think I prefer it over Biffy.
I had a feeling you might, because I know you like. Sometimes I have this. I certainly don't have this with Biffy. You're one of my favorite bands of all time, but I know the feeling when you can have a slight mental block against a particular artist, if not their sound. I kind of thought maybe if I introduce you to something with a similar. Approach to songwriting, but maybe just a different crop of individuals that you might enjoy it. So I'm glad that I was correct in that assumption.
It's totally up in Jamie Lemon's kind of wheelhouse, which is my zone of English music
for sure. Or Scottish, lest they
Yeah, yeah.
Beat us up. But I know what you mean. Yeah. British music. It's true. It's true.
British.
Yeah. Like, I love, like, it's, and you're right, there are fun moments in this. Like, there's a shaker in the chorus of, the last chorus of List of What Needs Said. It's like, you know, like, that just adds this weirdly poppy dynamic to a song that's very, very strange. And yeah, they do a lot of that on this album. Just like little fun moments that let you know that it's not all super serious, which would be a hallmark of this genre, I think. But really, it's just, it worms its way, I think, into your into your brain. And they never quite went back to this. So they have four albums, yeah. And Pain Agency, the follow-up to this, pushes out into more points. They almost more commit to if something's going to be experimental or commercial on a per song basis rather than trying to mix them all up.
That's hard.
I don't know that album so well, but it's quite good. The album after that, they went, which is why I always thought they had a similar trajectory to Biffy, but it's obviously a few years delayed. The Heartstring and How to Pull It is their attempt at a puzzle. Like, it's very radio minded. It's very pop songwriting. And actually, I went back to it and I liked it a lot more than I remembered. I actually really like it. It's 20. I couldn't say for 100% certain, but I think it's like maybe 2010. 2011. Yeah. I'd have to just double check that. It could even be 2009. That's worth checking out. It's actually not on Spotify, unfortunately.
There's only the three of them.
Yeah, but I can bring, you know, give you some access if you want to hear it, because I think it's a really interesting 2011. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting to hear a band that are this kind of angular and weird do the radio thing, and they have like a lot of female guest vocals on that record, and it's cool. And then the last album, which almost felt like a death spasm, I guess, for the band. I don't know if they're officially broken up or if they're on hiatus, but Fused, which is the final record, it has all of the hallmarks of kind of a last gasp in a good way, I would say, because it's very nasty.
Like,
it's very,
we gotta
short
get this all out there, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah,
kind of like a debut.
Some of the songs
are
weird. Yeah, some of the songs are weird. Like, they don't, they really commit to very strange concepts for certain songs. It's quite spiteful and angry, and not in the same way that the heavy parts are in this album. Although certain sections, it would remind me more of this album than their other work. But Fuse is very cool. It's on Spotify, and yeah, it's
cool.
It's an interesting and very quick listen. It's like 28 minutes long. So they're an interesting band. I kind of always wish they'd had a bit more success than they did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's because the old Biffy went a little farther, right?
Yeah.
Their reach
can
was
you
a little
think, can
more
you think of any
constant.
Other any other bands that kind of do a similar thing where one became very successful and the other didn't quite get there? They definitely exist.
I would say somewhere between Mars Volta and Sparta,
yeah,
maybe. So one outlasted the other, and yeah, one came back and the other one technically came back.
I mean, no, I think that's probably good, although they are literally like totally connected. But I kind of feel like maybe Foles and someone else, I just can't, like, maybe just try, like, who would have been a Foles contemporary back then, because they kind of went super commercial. You know,
Cast of Cheers.
Yeah,
right?
There you go. Brilliant example. The Foles and the Cast of Cheers. Like, on the one hand, like, very similar sound. One maybe adapted in a different way, or went down a certain route and gained massive, massive sort of international success, and the other kind of put it to a halt. It happens a lot, and I wish I could think of more examples off the top of my head, because it does happen a lot where bands are paired together, and then one will do exponentially better than the other. But you know what? I'm really glad that this exists. I'm glad it's still available online, because it is the kind of album that I think
could maybe disappear.
Fallen through the cracks and disappeared. Yeah. Actually, from what I understand, they were not on Spotify for years, and I think there was a push made to bring them back. Yeah. So enjoy it while you can, everybody. Any final thoughts?
No, I'm just... I love this wheelhouse of music, dude. I really do. It's it totally reminds me of Foo Fighters at their best.
Mm. Yeah, it does sound like Foo Fighters. Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. It's excellent. It's
adventurous.
And like that, when you say that wheelhouse, nothing gets me like a clean picked voice chord build up in like that final song. That such a sucker.
It's loud soft dynamics, perfectly.
Oh, loud soft dynamics, man. But just with enough personality and weirdness to make it kind of feel really essential. Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad you like this. I wanted to bring it back with an album that had a lot of nostalgia for it that I hadn't revisited in ages, and just to see how you felt about it. So I'm glad that you like it. And this was a big part of my listening diet back in secondary school. And it holds up.
Yeah.
All right.
Good time.
Favorite track?
Shit. It's probably Wolf Carnival.
Yeah. Those guitar runs that make up the verse are just...
Fuck. Just a drive. The real driving element of this band is something else.
Yeah. Really, really good. I think... I would have said The Drop, but I think that's too obvious. Actually, I'm gonna take The Final Confessions of Mabel Stark, last track. It's really good.
Fair.
Yep. Okay. Actually, no, I'm gonna take Grayson out of me. Sorry.
All of them. How about it?
It's all of them. Yeah, Grayson out of me. Just go listen to it. Random Acts of Intimacy by Sucio Pero means Dirty Dog in Spanish, but the words are the wrong way around and they're being pronounced wrong, so
we want to get monetized here.
yeah Sucio Pero is how you spell it. Right, well, thank you so much for joining us on another episode. Yeah. a nice brief tidy episode of Kill Shuffle, clocking in at just past the hour mark here. So next time we will obviously be covering Chromatica by Lady Gaga.
Yeah, we'll have a 2-hour long special.
Yeah.
Of Lady Gaga. I would, if no albums come out from then to here, then fuck it.
Oh no, don't worry. I always have a few releases in the back pocket to look at. But actually the Whitetail Falls record, the sort of dark folk spin-off of the Hoosiers is coming out. Apparently came out today, so I'll have to double check that. But I think that might be worth taking a look at. No, but we will certainly keep you entertained.
Great.
And like we were saying, the easing of lockdown may mean that we could be in a room together sooner than you might think.
And also, I have my pick for... I guess what we might do is choose the album on the spot during the podcast.
Oh.
Like what we discuss dictates kind of what we might want to listen to next.
By all means.
I'm going to go for If by Mindless Self-Indulgence, because I've been ragging on you for years to get to that shit.
You have. And now I have no choice.
You don't. Great. It's going to be insane.
I'm looking forward. All I know of Mindless Self-Indulgence is, I like my coffee black, just like my metal.
Exactly.
That's all I know. I'm preparing myself for more. Great stuff. Okay, so you can look forward to If by Mindless Self-Indulgence as next week's Time Machine. And as always, keep up to date with us on Facebook, Twitter, Spotify. Just follow the show and listen to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, mind yourselves out there.
Salam.
Bye.